Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends. Coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington. This is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show, radiating from the Beehive of Cultural Awareness, known formally as the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon broadcast studio in the bustling and always bodacious heart of our pastoral island community. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together, we, the Briefly, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Our Briefly panel today includes our control board magician, Vachon Airport Commissioner, mostly reformed Texan, and longest-serving Briefly, Truman O'Brien.
Good morning. I'm having some... No, it's not technical difficulties. It's operator error issues this morning.
Okay, well, maybe error on the right side.
Okay, there
we
go.
Have to err.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of technical difficulties, I'm looking for my script on my phone, but fortunately, we have a hard copy lent to me, so we should be able to carry on here.
All right.
And speaking of that person who's so generous, historian, professor, down under aficionado, and now even more in demand than ever, our guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman, is here.
Yes, that guardian of the galaxy. I need to pass that on to somebody who's more capable and less vindictive than I feel right now.
There's the key right there.
Yeah, right. Does your wife call you that at home?
She calls me other things.
It's one of those seven words that you can't say on the radio, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So am I to understand right that you might need to team up, Bruce, to be the appropriate guardian these days?
Well, I've actually found a new champion who I think may end up being the new guardian of the galaxy.
Okay.
Awesome.
The team of AOC and Bernie.
Oh,
they are doing a great job.
They're really getting a turnout, aren't they?
Are they
11,000 or something they had at one of their rallies?
34,000.
34,000
in Colorado.
Yep. Wow. Right. Yep.
Fantastic. Well, you know, we're going to hear a little bit about how Vachon can join in the fun as we get into the show. But for now, next up is legal beagle mediator, Fulbright scholar, and Renaissance man, Craig Bellis.
How you doing? I didn't give you up my hard copy of our agenda because I'd be lost without it.
I completely understand that feeling. And let's see, part-time Politico affordable housing advocate, full-time shenanigans coordinator Amy Dreher, we think, is off enjoying some time away. So hopefully Amy can join us next time around. Myself, Kevin Jones, Mariner backpacker, and has it really only been 64 days since he's been in office? I just can't understand that. But anyway, we shall carry on. Today, we also welcome returning Small Talk guest, founder and executive director of Women Hold the Key, Tina Shattuck. Hello, Tina.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Wonderful
so
to have you
here. So happy to be here today.
Absolutely. Well, as folks know, we're going to cover the news of the day in our usual lighthearted but passionately serious fashion. Let's first check in with the Brieflys and our guest about how things are going. So, Truman, why don't we start with you?
Okay, well, I had a couple of medical appointments this week, which went great. So that was the good news. But on Sunday, I just had a blast. Sunday, I used to consult with a furniture manufacturer, and these folks did all kinds of stuff. They built furniture. They were amazing couple, a man and his wife. And the fellow was Vic, and Vic just had a birthday. Well, in fact, I guess it's coming up Thursday. But his wife, Mandy, put on a surprise birthday party for him yesterday Sunday at the Headway. Is it Headworks? Headworks? Headway? Now I can't remember. Anyway, it's a brew pub over in Enumclaw. And it was an absolute surprise. More than 60 people showed up.
Nice.
Vic is a hot air balloon pilot. And in fact, he in 2002 he was awarded the Montgolfier Award, which is a national international award that's given like I think twice a year. and or two people a year, and he won it back in 2002 from because he flew from Enumclaw over to Yakima up over Mount Rainier. He went up over to 15,000 feet, you know, had oxygen, I mean, did the whole thing. Anyway, it was a fascinating thing that he did. And it was his birthday, and he was totally surprised that everybody showed up. So that was great fun.
Sounds like an awesome time.
Oh, it was wonderful absolutely. To see his face when he walked in. It was great.
Bruce, what have you been up to this week?
Well, a couple things. We had on Sunday, we had a birthday party for my seven-year-old granddaughter. And you forget what it's like when you get a bunch of seven-year-olds and their older and younger siblings in a small house like ours is. And it's sort of like, whew, you're glad to see them go. You're glad to have them there, but you're glad to see them go. And it's just sort of like, it is frenzy. But it was exciting. It was really exciting. The other thing that was really touching to me is the yacht club. Every spring does a Commodore's Ball to recognize a new Commodore. In the last few years, it's been the O Space and Camp Burton and places like that. But this year, they went back to the Sportsman's Club, which we used to do things at the Sportsman's Club a lot. And it's a great old building. And Craig, I believe you're a member of the Sportsman's Club. Are you still in good standing?
I've never been in good standing, but I am a member of the Sportsman's Club.
That's the attitude they have.
It is a fantastic look into Vashon's past. I mean, it's an old-time sort of hunting club, sports club on Vashon Island. It was formed in the 1930s. You know, they built the clubhouse right before World War II. It's got a vertical log cabin structure, which is very unusual. But there's three others on the island, or two others on the island. The Grange Hall was built by Deb Harrington, the same guy who helped build the Sportsman's Club. And there was one other building along the main highway that's now no longer there. But to walk into that space and just sort of feel that sort of history of Vashon, sort of the old Vashon, if you will. I mean, it's very touching. So it was a great weekend.
Cool. Nice. Next, and we should consider adding not in good standing Sportsman's Club member Craig Ellis. Craig, how was your weekend?
I had a wonderful weekend, and I want to reiterate what Trump. Oh my goodness.
Oh, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. It's got the first four letters are the same. Truman.
Boy. Oh my goodness sakes. Are we digging the hole deeper?
No, listen, let me tell you real quick.
Let's get very iron out.
When I get ready to sign my name, you know, and I write T-R-U-M, and the computer very often goes Trump, and I go,
oh, my goodness sakes.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't use a Sharpie when you sign your
name. No, I don't. No.
Last week on the show, you raved about Ride the Cyclone, and Lynette and I got a chance to see it here this last weekend, good. And holy cow, that ride up in the Beachcomber, which was just all praise, could hardly do it justice. It was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Then we saw Lunasa, which is considered by, I guess, many to be the primo Irish band in the world right now. The two-time Irish fiddle player is one of the members of the band, and they put on a great show at VCA to a full house, went to the Coop last night, had a little gathering there, great gathering of people who've been with the Coop for a long time. And then now I'm preparing for an anniversary. This Saturday we're going to be celebrating a one-point landing that Truman and I made
four years
ago.
Yeah. I forgot. That's coming up here on the 29th.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I forgot about that.
Well, one point. They cleaned the bottom of the plane, I hear.
Well.
Yeah. We scraped it off pretty good.
That's
yeah.
right.
Uh-huh. Hey, you know, I forgot to mention, I'm leaving tomorrow for one of my treks down to Ashland, Oregon for the Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah, the word is out.
It's out, and that's I'm going right. to be gone. Anyway, that should be fun. So.
Okay. Well, hey, Tina Shattuck, how's your weekend?
It's been, I think, good. I mean, if you look outside, it can't be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just got to go with that. I am recovering from a really busy March, as you all know. It's International Women's Month. And so on the first weekend, we had a partner program at VCA with VCA and Vashon Rep. the weekend after, I did an AI community conversation, right, which was really fascinating and a lot of work. And this week, I'm just trying to recover. I'm feeling my age. I'm tired. My brain's not working. It's been a good week and a difficult week. We lost somebody who was kind of near and dear to us. I don't know if you are familiar with Frank Chop, who was the Speaker of the House.
Yes.
I called him Uncle Frank. I met him when I was 18. He's Allison Reed's uncle. So that was hard and sudden and kind of heartbreaking. But other than that, and then the world burning, I think I'm doing okay. My new theme is think macro, keep it micro. So stay in my lane and find joy wherever I can. So, yeah, good.
Words to live by. Yeah. And we'll have more of those words to live by as we go through the show today. Yes, thank you. So Amy, I understand, is probably in somewhere between here and Washington, D.C. I'm guessing Denver, but we're not sure totally. But she did tell me she'd be out, but I didn't know if she'd miss the show. Let's see. My week has been kind of interesting. Teresa Mosqueda was here in town on Tuesday. And amongst many other things, she visited the Vashon United Methodist Church, which, if you haven't had a chance to drive past the church on the dirt road just south of the church to see all the solar panels, you might want to do that. And, oh, by the way, they have enough battery storage to run the church for 3 days.
Wow.
And so the idea that it can be a sustainability center, or otherwise known as a resilience hub, is something that we talked with Teresa and her staff about, but also a member of the Strategic Climate Action Plan that King County is putting together. So we shall see how we go forward, but they're quite interested in sustainability and resilience in the face of climate change. So hopefully we made a great impression there with Teresa Mosqueda. I also did have a chance to get into town and have lunch with those other top secret engineers that you sometimes talk about. So that's always kind of fun. The other thing that is in the past is on Sunday, this last Sunday, sprint races at off Point Jensen Point. The Vashon Island Rowing Club hosted a group of folks, 229, if I remember the number right, came over, 10 different teams, I think, and they fortunately got all of that done before the wind came up.
I saw two of the big trailers with a bunch of the shells on it going off the island. I thought, what in the world's going on?
So that's what it was. Invitational.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
The other thing that was quite interesting is a couple of days before that, one of the new boats at the Vashon Island Rowing Club was named the Schwabopsch.
Oh,
in
nice.
Honor of the Swiftwater Tribe, and coordinated. Thank you for Delaney Steele for coordinating with the tribe on the basically, I don't know, authorization or awareness or a grace of, yes, go ahead and make that change. So we look forward to the Swabopsch being on the water here again on Vashon. It's a new boat in the rowing club. And just the last thing I'll mention, look in all kinds of media for April 5th. Olympia, Indivisible Vashon, and others will be traveling for a day of hands-off protest. Details will come out. Our newsletter comes out tomorrow, so there should be information there. Also look probably online at the website as well as social media to find out the details. But so far I've heard somebody's going to arrange a bus.
Yes.
Yeah, so that could be fun. I don't have the details yet, don't have confirmation, but you know, there could be a bus. All right, well, with all that fun and games, why don't we go ahead and take a look at what's the important things that have happened today. So some inspiration from history. Today is March 25th, a Bed In for Peace Day. You may remember John Lennon and Yoko Ono there first in 1969, Bed In for Peace. And apparently it's a thing, which I actually did not know. So
I'll take any opportunity.
Well, Tina, you were just saying you need to catch up on your sleep. So there you go. Let's see. Also, International Day of Remembrance of the Victims of Slavery and the Transatlantic Slave Trade. Mm. And that was featured quite prominently on the historical websites that I looked at. So hopefully remembrance along with internments and other things that we keep in mind, right, about how to not do those things again, we hope, as we go forward. We hope. Also a struggle for human rights day, which seems so very appropriate. Today is that day. So hopefully we can all rally around that. It's also Tolkien reading day if you need to escape a little bit from the reality of what's happening in our government. That's a good segue to sort of take
I'm
on
not sure it's
view.
An escape from reality.
I was just thinking that.
as much as real. A model for what you do with the reality.
There you go.
Shall we associate the names of the characters in Tolkien with the current people in the administration? That
they
might
do
be
call him
do.
The evil one. In the
I want to know who Frodo
the Lord
is.
Of the Rings.
Who's Frodo? That's, yeah, what
right.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right. Yeah. We need a Frodo.
Right.
But I don't think there's any of them that are as stupid as some of the folks we have today.
Oh, man. Well, I wonder who Gollum is. You know, that could be
a good question.
I have a name in mind, but you know, we have to be careful. Yeah. We have to be careful about this.
I have a name in mind as well. We'll have to
one of those
talk
seven,
about that.
One of those seven
next
words.
Yeah, right. Brown Briefly's, we'll get together off the air and see what we can and cannot say.
We don't want them to take our license away
that's
from
right,
us, right?
You know, you just never
we
know.
We will
what's
not consent beforehand. That's we're not doing that.
That's mm-hmm. right.
Yeah, do not obey in advance, I think, is what Tim Snyder
mm-hmm.
says.
That's right.
All right. Well, hey, also today in history, some interesting names. Gloria Steinem, Aretha Franklin, and Elton John were all born on this day, 1934, 1942, and 1947, respectively.
And on the morning scramble this morning, we played Aretha and John, Elton John.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you couldn't find any Gloria to.
No, I didn't.
She probably didn't have a large, big playlist. Okay. Maybe some hidden gems. Who knows? Let's see. Also in 1436, the Brunelleschi Dome is consecrated by Pope Eugene IV, which is in Italy, Florence, if I understand right. And I don't know who here has been in the dome.
I don't know if I've ever been in that dome, no.
You can climb to the top of it, and it's actually a two-layered dome. Mm-hmm. So you basically, to ascend to the top of the dome, you climb on the inner dome. Which I think was created so that they could construct the outer dome. It's kind of fascinating. Let's see. 1954, the first color TV, 12.5-inch screen. Everybody has the script here, but our listeners, how much do you think it was? How much money do you think it was? Listeners, I'll give you 2 seconds. One, two, $1,000.
And how much is that in today's dollars?
Wow. You know, in 1954, I was, you know, not even here.
Yeah, I was.
So were you. I was, yeah. You know, we used to have one of those big stand-up radios, big AM, mm-hmm. you know.
Oh, yeah,
you could
right.
dial in the boats off the coast, you know, and mm-hmm. listen to those sort of things. And it had a little light on it, little tiny light that was about, 2 inches by 2 inches. And I used to tell my friends, they'd go, "What is this?" And I'd go, it's a television. And they go, "Oh, really?" And they go, "It's got kind of a small screen." And I go, "Yeah, that was the really early ones. If you look real closely, I'll turn it on." And they'd all stand there and stare at this light until they realized they've been had.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, you know, next briefly is April Fool's.
That's right. Exactly right. Sounds like you were a lawyer in training.
No. I changed my evil ways when I became a lawyer.
Don't you believe a word of that, folks. So, hey, I just looked it up. $1,000 in 1954 with the inflator is $11,732 today.
Wow. Okay.
So that would have been one expensive TV.
Yeah, only a factor of 10 or so. All right. Yeah. Let's see. Also, 1961, Sputnik 10 carries a dog into Earth orbit, mm-hmm. which I hope, I'm not sure how many folks of our listening audience can remember the details of that.
I do remember that.
I do too.
And I remember that particular dog lasted about 2 hours.
Yeah,
in space, unfortunately. You know, the Russians sent up like 60 or 70 dogs, and I think 16 of them, unfortunately, to say the least, died. Mm-hmm. But the rest of them survived.
So. I think this one is, they said this dog was recovered from its journey.
This one?
Well, you know, I think that's what it said. I didn't write it
down. I checked that out when I saw this.
But yeah, got it.
I'll place a side bet.
Yeah. I have to tell you that I went to the UN building in 1964 or 65. No, 63 or 64. And they had a replica of Sputnik, the very first one, hanging in the atrium. Yeah, it was mm-hmm. a tiny little thing.
A little basketball with four antennas.
With a couple of antennas, yeah.
Right. Well, let's see, a very notable day on this day in 1965. Martin Luther King Jr. and other civil rights activists completed their march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. Two previous marches had been halted by local police. So, of course, as we also recognize the International Day of Remembrance of the Victims of Slavery, you can also see the movement to move past that and gain civil rights for more and more people in this country. May it always be so.
I have to stand corrected. You are correct. Oh. Sputnik 10. Yeah, I was thinking of Sputnik 2, the first time a dog went up.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay. So you are correct. This dog survived.
Should have done the side bet after
you
all.
Should have.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad to see my research skills haven't faded so far. But, you know, keep an eye on me. You never know when they're going to lose them. All right. Small talk. Tina Shattuck, how did I... Tina, you are the founder of Women Hold the Key. You've been on to talk with us before.
I have.
About sort of your perspective on the world, but we'd like to focus on Women Hold the Key today. And I'm curious if you might just either tell us or remind us, how did that start? And was there like an aha moment that came to mind for you?
What's my origin story?
Absolutely.
There you go.
Well, I woke up on my birthday when I turned 50. And I was like, okay, here we go. Do you guys remember turning 50?
No.
Vaguely.
Scratching my head now.
Yeah, right? And it was also the day where they were having the Supreme Court. Christine Blasey Ford was testifying, and I woke up and I, you know, turned the TV on. I was like, okay, let's do this. Rock on. And by noon, I was like, oh, shoot. Oh, this is just all show. This doesn't matter. And I was probably more incensed at that point than I'd ever been around sort of like the play and parody to, you know, women's issues than I had. I don't know. For some reason, it just sort of, I was like, oof, I was really mad. And so at that particular point in time, I just made a commitment to myself to try to gather the women that had helped me become a parent and parented and, you know, had been with me my whole life as a, and I wanted just to reach out and acknowledge how important they were to me. And so I started really Women Hold the Key with an amulet, which is, I've got it around my neck. Mm-hmm. And it's a key design based on the keys that they found in Viking women's graves that signified that they were the power centers of their community. And I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So worked with somebody, designed it, and a few months later gave it to 50 women in my community just as a reach out. And then that's kind of how we started. So for about a year and a half, that's what I did, as I created keys and I gave them to people. There are probably 800 out in the world. Wow. They're all over, all over every continent. Because that's what women did, is they purchased them for the people in their lives as a way to, you know, acknowledge how important they were. And then, you know, after a little bit, I kind of recognized that what we really want is community, and what we really want to do is to know each other and see each other and to know that we matter in the face of our community. And so I started doing gatherings at that point. I did a lot of really interesting stuff during COVID online, and then really started classes in January of 2023. So that's kind of how it started. And we're going gangbusters. Is that word okay? Is that okay? Yeah, I always think, oh, geez,
I know. That one's okay. We do have expressions that are
that
iffy.
Yeah, but so we're a busy little. We call ourselves small but mighty.
All right. Mm-hmm.
So are there other chapters, as it were?
There are. Yeah, there's a chapter in Tralee, Ireland. Huh. So a little town southwest, not too far from Limerick. Mm-hmm. On the close to the Dingle Coast. Yeah, mm-hmm. of a small chapter. Mm-hmm. And they are doing what we did at the beginning, which was just a monthly get-together where anybody who wanted to come would show up, and we'd do this kind of round table. Who are you? What do you have to offer? And what do you need? So how can we help each other? So,
do you find any conflict with the Viking symbol with the Irish?
No, they haven't said anything yet. Okay. They probably will.
I'm if I wanted to get a key like that for my daughter and granddaughter, is that possible?
It is. I have to redesign them. I don't know, Bruce. You can hold on to this, or it's really, ooh, really, really, really heavy. I never made them to make money. I made them as a gesture. Mm-hmm. And so I have to redesign them smaller so that they're less expensive to produce and less expensive to buy. But yes, my hope is by the end of summer that I will have. And I have three keys. This is called the matriarch key. And then I have a mother key and a maiden key. Signifies the three different sort of phases of women's lives. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Okay.
I'll have it done by the end of the summer, right? Yeah.
Well, it sounds like things started kind of informally with just outreach to friends. And then when did things like formalize and Women Hold the Key became a thing? And I assume you're sort of a business now.
We are a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it sort of formalized in a way that was more outward right around COVID, because the executive director at the senior center at the time, Catherine Swearingen, came to the very last meeting, and I think it was March 15th, and everything closed on March 17th. And so we were like, do we have a meeting? How dangerous is it?
Yes.
And we were just like, okay, we need to be in community one more time. So she came and she said, you know, things are imminently going to become very difficult and we need help. And I said, well, what do you need? She said, well, you know, we have 750 seniors who can't come in now, don't know if they can pick up their pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. They don't know if they can actually go grocery shopping. They don't have lunch available. Their risk is really high, and I'm not really sure what to do. And so I partnered with them and just called a whole bunch of folks, mostly women, but some of my men friends too. And we put together a phone tree and spent months checking in with every single senior citizen through the senior center to make sure that they had their needs taken care of. And so that's kind of when it was like, we are called to be in service, so let's do that.
Fantastic.
So we did that.
All right. Well, you mentioned also a couple of the programs earlier, but maybe just generalize.
We have so many.
And what are the goals you hope to achieve through the programs you offer? What change are you seeking to be making, if you will?
I think the goal really is to listen to community and try to fill needs, figure out what community wants, what women, how they want to be in community with each other, what they want to learn, how they want to be empowered. So our model is really interesting. It is free to come to any class, program, not programs, can be class, get together. All of the stuff that we do is free. All of our teachers teach for free, which is it's a pretty community driven model. So what I have been doing primarily, except for very specific things that I wanted to do, is say to the teacher, a community of teachers, what is it you want to teach? What's your expertise? Because most people just really want to give back. They want to be in community. They want to give back. And they have expertise. And I'm like, okay, let's do that. Let's do that. I almost never say no. Mm-hmm. What I don't want to do is replicate something that's already happening in the community, because that's where you should go. And so I want to do stuff that is new, innovative maybe, and connective. We have probably over 40 opportunities a month for you to come to the center to do something. Mm-hmm. We have women's community days on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So from 10 to 4, you can just come in. You can read your book. You can have a cup of tea. You can take a nap. You can bring a friend in. You can have a conversation with somebody who's already there. You can work. You can do anything. Mm-hmm. And then we have a ton of programming, personal development, fun. We have a movie club. Mm-hmm. We have a salon every fourth Sunday where we talk about women's issues. We have a game afternoon. We have lots of different things that hopefully support women in various different ways. Because, you know, we don't all like to do the same thing. We don't all connect in community over the same stuff. So,
If I may, Bruce, the
those programs, those classes, mm-hmm. with those sound like great outcomes, just organizing those.
Yeah.
And having those available.
Yeah.
Beyond that, can you point to what you consider maybe some of your successes?
Well, I think it's data driven, and the data that's already out there that tells us when women are supported and empowered, not only does their family benefit, because women take everything that they learn, have, get, and give it to their family, but it also their community benefits from it. And that is data that's different from when men are supported and empowered. And I'm sitting here with four lovely yes. gentlemen, but I think the data is pretty strong that women, because we're not men and we do things differently, when women are supported and empowered, everybody benefits. Everyone in the community benefits. The data's there. We just you can look it up. It's there for every small community. It's there for lots of different ways. So.
Yeah, I mean, talking about data, a lot of people are familiar with the 3/5 rule, the concept that a lot of corporate boards and those kind of things, if you get 3/5 of the membership mm-hmm. are women, mm-hmm. the nature of the decision process changes.
It does.
Both the process itself and the outcomes
yeah.
change.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of metrics is that a proper kind of, is that a usable metric, or is that sort of falling apart in the sort of modern world
yeah,
we live
DEI
in?
The DEI world.
Yeah, right.
You know what?
Right.
What I mean, you talked about data, but what are the metrics that sort of really represent that to people who don't who don't sort of
right.
live in that world, if you will?
Well, I think the data that you're talking about is that when the tipping point in when you're in community, and if you're like in the boardroom or if you're mm-hmm. doing big work, mm-hmm. that when you have a certain amount of women, the emotional intelligence of
right.
the group improves, right?
Right.
So that's, I think, the
yeah.
data that you're
right.
talking
yeah.
about. I think if you're talking about equity... Mm-hmm. I think that's, I think we've gone, we you know, it was at one point, maybe a year and a half ago, that we would achieve gender parity in 130 years.
No.
That was a couple years ago.
Right.
I would imagine, I hate
we've
to say.
We've backslid.
And I would imagine, I hate to say this out loud because I run a women's organization, but I don't know that we'll ever have gender parity. I don't know in our current patriarchal system where that will ever be possible.
Yeah. Again, though, you're talking about the U.S., right? Or you're talking,
about global.
The world. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know there are some matrilineal. Thank you.
Lineal.
Matrilineal.
Yes.
Yeah. Societies. I know there's some.
There are very few. They're very remote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But generally.
Yes.
We're talking internationally.
Yeah, we're talking about sort of like where we all live and breathe.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
And we're not really even talking about Vashon, because Vashon is a very special place.
We're different.
Where maybe there could be gender parity here. And maybe there is already to some degree in some ways. I don't know.
Have you been, you talked about programs and, you know, all the variety of things you do. I mean, one of the things that always surprised me about Vashon is when you start to do anything, people come out of the woodwork, and people with incredible experience and incredible expertise
yes.
that you sort of like, you live on Vashon?
Exactly.
Have you had that experience?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You've done that? Yeah, it's really incredible. I guess my question is, because I've lived here for 25 years, is do other small communities have this concentration of just smart, go-getter...
I don't think so.
You don't think so. So you
no,
think
really
we're really
I've,
unique here.
I've been
here.
In little towns.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. Just not
it's,
even close.
Yeah. Yeah, my sense, because it's a question I always ask, is how unique is Vashon? I mean,
right.
we think we're unique. In many ways we are. And what I'm seeing from what I can gather, and it's nobody's really doing much research on it, but there are communities like Vashon
mm-hmm.
That are seeing, particularly because of COVID, seeing a sort of influx of people moving out of urban centers, bringing
right.
in expertise,
right.
but they tend to be communities that are very specialized. You know, in Colorado in the mountains, you know, New Mexico in the desert, and places like Vashon, and they tend to be relatively close to urban centers. Otherwise, they're so isolated that they become over-gentrified, if you will. And that's happening on Vashon to a certain extent, but they become so gentrified that there's no sort of, the people who live, who work there can't afford to live there.
Right.
And that's what we're starting to see a bit of that on Vashon.
Yes, we absolutely are.
So there are some communities similar to Vashon, but they're very rare. And they have to be in a sort of unique sort of geographical, you know, sort of cultural position to be able to experience what Vashon has.
Right. But I guess I would say it underneath it all, our needs are all the same, whether we're in big community or little. And the needs are those basic humans, right? Human needs. If we have shelter and we have food and we feel somewhat safe, then our need to be seen and to be heard and to know that we matter, and especially post-COVID, the need for resilience and the need to be in community, because people were lonely. We're isolated. That is not anything that's going to ever change, whether you're in this small town or another small town. So those sort of baseline ideas that we try to support women in particular in probably will never change, no matter what community you go to. So if you're in sort of traditional small communities, especially maybe in the middle of America, if you don't belong to the PTA or the Canning Club or the church, what do you have?
That's what I was going to say. In the farming communities, you know, I think there's a, that circle is more complete within a farming community.
Yes, I agree.
Because of them. You know, you mentioned that what started this whole thing was watching television and being really upset by what you saw.
Yeah.
So this is supposedly an outward appearing, we're going to empower women, and yet it was not. Are there other examples of that you can point out?
I think we see it all day, every day, don't we?
Well, but... Yeah, I mean, give us an example.
I mean, we're not a political organization.
Right.
We're nonpartisan, but you know, we see on a daily basis that women, people of color, and the LGBTQ community are losing rights on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, how many anti-trans bills are there? How many places are trying to, well, it's national. Like, well, if you don't have your birth certificate or your birth certificate has a different last name than your married name, then like every day it is, it feels like a war on women. And sort of the underlying theme under that is that the people who probably don't like women feel more emboldened to actually say your body, my choice, the kind of rhetoric that we see around there. And how does that affect young women? Because I'm an old lady and I can just be like, that I'm good. But what does that do to young women? I have a 17-year-old daughter. What does she kind of encounter through social media that tells her that she's not good enough, not whatever? So,
Tina, I'm curious, you know, one of the things that I do is legislation and sort of advocate for passing legislation. And I find that in some cases, the people opposing legislation are amazingly able to talk in terms that sound like it's really good, right?
Absolutely.
We're progressive. Are there, does that happen also in instances of, hey, here's something that will really empower women, and it's a myth, it's a fake, it's a hoax, right? Are there seeing that? Is it more of that? And how do you warn people away from that so they don't fall for those things? Is that a thing?
Well, I was thinking about it, and I was trying to come up with sort of a couple examples. What I thought about was the trad movement. Are you guys familiar with the trad movement?
No.
So trad, traditional, and it's a whole movement of, we call them trad. They call themselves trad wives. So women going back to the traditional, you know, homemaker, jam maker. So you know, like that whole trad movement. In theory, it's supposed to sort of support that women can actually do and be whatever they want to be. But in actuality, what it does is it creates divisiveness between those women and the women who don't feel that way or who haven't chosen that.
Yes.
So I think that there are movements within sort of the women's movement that
But Phyllis Schlafly, Phyllis Schlafly or something, wasn't that mm-hmm. Norman from Florida? Yeah. Who was a big traditional
Schlafly. Yeah, Schlafly. ERA. You know, she was a big opponent of the ERA.
Exactly.
Yeah, sort of like, you know, and the approach was that, hey, you know, women already have rights under the Constitution. Right. We don't need an equal rights amendment, and it'll actually hurt women rather than, you know, it's a sort of a counterintuitive argument, and it, you know, but it's that trad wife kind of approach.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of like women are protected. You know, women have husbands and the fathers and that to protect them. But the reality is not all women have that.
Well, the reality is that women aren't safe in the world.
No.
I mean, we may be safe on Vashon, but women are not safe.
No.
That's why women don't go places alone. Right. They don't go to their car alone. They have their key. I mean, you know, we understand, and most men do, especially if you have a wife or a daughter, you know that women aren't safe in the world. Right. It's. I don't know that that's ever going to change.
No.
You know, you mentioned some policies that obviously are detrimental to women that we're seeing more and more of these days. I'm curious to move that from policy to example, the roles that men play, one, in government. The examples that some of the leaders that we have in the United States now, how much of an effect do you think that has on women's empowerment or the lack thereof?
Well, I think it has a huge effect because I think it affects certain types of men and specifically certain types of young men.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
so I think it has a huge effect on our continued fight for equality or equity. It's really disturbing.
It gives permission, doesn't it, to some people think that they...
It absolutely does.
That they can get away with
right?
it.
Right? Yeah. The same way that permission for a lot of stuff has been given.
Right.
For
any marginalized group.
Yeah. Well, let me follow up on that a little more. What is the role of men in your model of empowered women? Why should men be encouraged by the notion of empowered women?
Well, I don't know. Let me ask you guys a question. Are you married to women?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you? Any of you have daughters or granddaughters?
Yes.
Why do you think men's roles are really important in the fight for equity and equality for women?
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. My daughter called the other day and said, "Dad, I've got a flat tire."
Mm-hmm.
And I went, "Yeah."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and well, can you bring over your air pump? Yeah. Okay. So I get over there. And guess who changed the tire?
She did.
She did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just said, good job.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And she also took auto shop, by the way, when she was in high school, one of the few women in the class, and learned how to do the brakes on her car. And, you know, anyway, I support that kind of stuff.
You know, beyond that, I just believe in justice and fairness.
Yeah, right.
And I think that that women deserve all the justice and fairness that men have had for years and years. And it just really pisses me off. I can say that.
You can.
when I see that not happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you see that they think it's happening. They think, you know, I mean, the people in power think, oh, yeah, we're being great with women, or, you know.
Well, they're doling out.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe,
exactly.
You know, some token things.
Exactly.
Well, a piece of it is how we're set up. This is a patriarchal system, right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't benefit men any more, really, than it does women, right? Because men are kind of also stuck in these roles where they can't be full 100% human beings, right? There are differences between men and women, but we have the same hearts and souls, and we want the same things for each other. I hope, you know, that's how I want to see the world. I don't know. I have two sons and I have a daughter, so I have a really vested interest in men healing their own traumas so they don't pass it on, and looking through the lens of what is equity and parity. And, you know, I think I'm a parent, so and I grew up in a pretty traditional model. I actually lived and I was married to somebody and I did all the housekeeping. I did all the cooking. I did all the stuff. And that person went to work. And there's this idea about the emotional labor that women take on in life that is so much bigger than most men even understand what it is. So if we can equalize stuff to, if we can just keep moving that needle forward, mm-hmm. because if women aren't free, nobody's free.
Yeah, my sense too, in hearing you say that, it's sort of like, I mean, the only way that can occur is by living it, mm-hmm. you know, and sort of becoming role models, and not as an individual, but as a couple or as a group,
yes.
You know, and that's tough to do, but at mm-hmm. the same time, you know, I look at my granddaughters who's 13, mm-hmm. and that's a vulnerable age,
absolutely.
You know, tremendously vulnerable age. And it's important that she be surrounded with strong men and strong women,
absolutely.
Who understand that nature of equality.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge. And it's
yes.
so easy for men to slip back into, well, that's the way it's always been, the trad wife
yeah.
kind of approach. I mean, it's very easy. And because it's been there a long time,
right?
It's very comfortable.
Well,
for
it's
guys.
Worked for a lot of people for
exactly.
a long time, or
exactly.
half the world for a long time.
Yeah, well, yeah, right,
yeah.
exactly.
So,
you know,
yeah,
and yet it's not working.
You know, one of the things that I like the term equity mm-hmm. over equality. Mm-hmm. I think it makes a heck of a lot more sense.
It does.
I mean, it's we're not equal. There's no chance of that. But
right.
but we can have equity,
yeah.
and that's what is important. I think. So
I agree.
You know, I on this question of, you know, empowered women and encouraging, why should men be encouraged by the notion of empowered women? I kind of think to who represents us here in Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
We have two women senators, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The state legislature. I tried to go back and see if there was like a correlation between progressive communities and the gender representation they have.
Women in leadership, yeah.
Yeah, and it really didn't jump out at all.
Interesting.
That there was.
Right.
You know, of course, we of the three legislators we have, you know, two are women.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and from where I am with the organizing that I do, I don't know how clear it is to people that I am a minority, my gender minority in most of my organizing, mm-hmm. or at least gender parity
mm-hmm.
of two groups that I want to help create. Another one that I joined early on mm-hmm. has gender parity
mm-hmm.
in the
statewide
Indivisible Network.
Yeah.
I'm a gender minority.
Yep.
On the equity committee, mm-hmm. Definitely a gender minority.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that it is intriguing, right, to walk on that where you are a gender minority and the things that you learn.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that either gender has it dialed in 100%,
no,
right?
No,
right?
Because we're all humans.
Yeah.
We're all human beings.
But the notion that different genders really do bring different perspectives.
They do.
There's a different life experience.
I think
that being able to recognize and integrate that and maybe I'm just biased because I grew up in a world in my career of multidisciplinary teams
mm-hmm.
and the reality that, you know, if you had more different perspectives on any team, you get a better result.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's just the basis of my thought about that.
Yeah, I like that. I think that the idea of a different system that's not patriarchal is scary to a lot of people, when in fact, if it was matrilineal or matriarchal, it would not be top down. It would be a circle, and it would be equitable in much bigger ways. I mean, I don't know. It feels like we're about ready to burn everything to the ground. Everything might get burned to the ground. So does that give us a really interesting opportunity to start again? And what does that look like? And who gets seats at that table? Yeah.
And I think, Bruce, you had a question that might actually link into that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like, what do you see happening? I mean, we're aware of the threats. We're aware of the challenges. We're aware of what's happening right now on a national political level
yeah.
with sort of the demonization of all kinds of things that don't fit within a patriarchal structure.
Yeah.
What's the future? I mean, what do you
gosh.
See? And how do we resist that? And how do we change that?
Well, I know what we do, we have to do at a community level. Mm-hmm. We have so little control over a lot of what's happening, but we have lots of control over what's happening here. So I think that we really recognize that community engagement and community building and community support is really kind of all we have. All we really can do, most of us, is affect what happens in our own zip code. We don't have any control. We have, you know, no sway in a lot of the different things. I see on a daily basis that the women who come into the Synergy Center for Women and hang out there and do stuff, they feel connected in a way that they never have before, and certainly that they have not since pre-COVID. So what we've created is a space that feels safe, that is safe for women, where you can kind of bring everything to the table, the good and the bad, and it's there's no judgment around it, and there's a lot of support. And so I feel like I talk to my board in January, like January 16th, like, okay, here we go. Do we refocus? What do we do? We're a nonprofit, so we're nonpolitical. But what do we do? And over a 2.5-3 hour discussion, it was really, we're going to keep on doing what we do, and we're going to create community for women, and we're going to help women here. We're going to, try to empower the women in this community, and then we're creating a model for chapter expansion. So can we take this model where it's all sort of like, you know, what does your community want? Who are the women in your community? And what do you want to learn? And how do you want to be together? And create a model for small rural areas. And so that's what we're doing. So it doesn't really change the work. I mean, me personally, I have my own personal views about what I would like to do. But my kids have to be grown first, so I just leave that.
Well, we always have said all politics are local, and yes, indeed they are.
Yeah,
because
they are.
You have to just work on what you can do.
You do. Yeah. And you know, it's really more important now than ever, I think, that we recognize where we find joy, because that's a form of resistance too. Like just having a good life.
Yes.
Yeah.
So is it exportable to other communities?
Yes.
And how does it get exported? You know, how do other communities contact you? How do other communities learn about what you're doing?
So we're working on that. We're working on a chapter expansion kit. Would really kind of like this kit that would give a new community, a new small rural town, all of the framework that they might need to start it on their own, from community surveys to, you know, what programming might look like, to all the different things. So we're working on chapter expansion now, and we hoped to have something ready-ish, you know, sometime this year. I have personally had reach outs from Central Florida, Texas, Idaho. These are all really red states.
Right.
Canada, New York. Of people who are like, what is this you're doing, and what is this all about, and is there a way for us to replicate it? So yes, it is really scalable for sure.
So how big are you? How big is your organization?
Well, I don't know if you count the people who run it. It's me, and I have an admin person, so yeah. I work lots of hours.
But I mean, how many people participate?
So last year we had almost 2,000 participants in over 360 programs.
Wow.
And when I say programs, there's community days, there's, you know, all the different things that we do. I would imagine we had gone from, if I remember correctly, just under 1,000 the year before, our first year, with just under 1,000 people with like 120 programs, classes, whatever. So we've doubled just about every year. Wow. And I think we're in line to do that again.
Wow.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it's catching. You know, it's kind of like a virus.
Yeah.
You know, it's catching. It's going to get out there.
Not like a virus.
Well, no, they're good. They're good viruses. They're good viruses.
So we're hearing over and over and over again in media that really all you can do, like community action, community activism, community connection. It may be that there is some dystopian future that we may be real for us, and all we have is our community. Who knows?
I'm seeing this in if you look at the MSNBC type coverage, these groups that are getting together, I mean, this is all political, of course, but I mean, this stuff is catching fire.
Yeah, but when we have opportunities to be in community, it is almost impossible for us to not to have conversations and be like, oh, you do that. I need that. Yeah. Or, oh, this is what you're doing. I'd like to get involved in that. Yeah. I mean, we know, we see that all the time, for sure.
To one aside, Truman, to what you just said. So this is my month on the Washington Indivisible Network to handle the emails that come into the group. Right. Mm. And one of those email streams comes from our regional coordinator saying, hey, we have a new group. Hey, make sure they know all about how to get involved with the Washington Indivisible Network, WIN. Right. And literally yesterday, three new groups got added. I think we're up to somewhere around 15 to 20 new groups in Washington State in terms of building community, coming together. Mm-hmm. But I did want to jump into another question, and it might be a little, I'm not sure how obvious, how straightforward it is. We know what we're seeing is cultural change in this country. I guess I would call it cultural erosion, right? We also talked earlier about there are matriarchal societies in the world. Mm-hmm. Are there cultures that you would model, if you will? What are the cultures you would model for empowering women? Are there any that come to mind? Is it all kind of you have to make your own way because there are no like really great models out there to pursue?
Well, the model that we're using is really loosely based on what women did in the 60s and 70s around the Equal Rights Amendment, right? Okay. They created community centers for women where they could help each other, they could support each other, they could pass on information, they could become a network. Mm-hmm. We are going to become, I fear, or maybe it's okay, an underground networked community of communities helping each other in all the ways that all communities need help and in ways that women need extra support and help in. So I modeled it loosely after just that idea. Now, those centers were very different. They had childcare, they had food programs, they fed people, and they were mostly in non-white communities. So, you know, the model is sort of not exactly that. But women have been in community around kitchen tables, around sewing tables, or in kitchens, around hearths. We're a tribal culture. That's how we started, and that's what we do. Everything we do is circular. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and I before we go to Truman, you know, I think of models like the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who stood up in so many dire instances in her nation and took leadership role.
Jacinda.
And So I don't know if that's a cultural phenomenon or just an individual stepping forward that had the talent and the capabilities to be in that role.
Well, there are some cultural phenomenons happening around women and marriage and children right now. Yes. So, I mean, the times are calling for us to be different.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Great.
So,
thanks.
So that's perfect segue. I mean, I know what I have just a one daughter, and I know the things that I've done to help, you know, prepare her to succeed, and I think she's doing pretty well at it. What can you recommend that fathers do to help empower their daughters? I mean, seriously, are there some specific things that we can do?
So I would recommend that fathers actually help their female partners, their wives, in sharing emotional loads of raising children. And that is a huge, that's what we can see. Right. If we are in families where we're raising young women and there are two people in the house and one happens to be male and one happens to be female, how can we share that emotional load so that our daughters can see that this is not woman's work, that this is, you know, people's work? Yeah. So
good.
Yeah. All right.
Well, as we come down to the last minute or so, do Tina let people know how they can get connected, and then maybe we'll hear from Bruce about what's up next week.
Awesome. You can always come to the Women's Community Center when we're on the corner of Gorsuch and the highway, and we're there almost all the time. Mm-hmm. But womenholdthekey.com is where you want to go. Sign up for the newsletter. Look at the calendar. Pick a couple things and come try them out.
Wonderful.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Bruce, the April Fool's Show.
Yes, next Tuesday is April 1st, April Fool's Day. So it's going to be a Truman Show, which means it's...
But now, wait a minute. I resemble that remark.
No correlation.
Yeah, right. So it's just the briefly sort of talking about all of their memorable April Fool's experiences. So tune in for a joyful, hopefully, celebration of everybody being a fool.
I love it.
Wonderful. All right. Well, for Tina, Truman, Bruce, Craig, Amy, in extension, I am Kevin. We thank you for listening. We'll see you again next week on The Brown Briefly.